This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. The chairman of the Boston School Committee resigned today. Boston Mayor Marty Walsh says he accepted Michael Locanto's resignation this morning. Last night, during a Boston School Committee meeting over Zoom, Locanto appeared to mock the names of participants in the virtual meeting and was caught on his microphone. The 8.5-hour meeting was focused primarily on a vote to suspend for 1 year the use of an exam for admission to Boston's exam schools. And joining us now is WBUR's Max Larkin, who covered the committee meeting last night. Max, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back, Tiziana.
So what an odyssey, Max. I really think we have to start by you setting the stage for us. We've got this 8.5-hour Zoom meeting. The subject is something that's been long a source of pain and debate, exposing racial fault lines in the Boston public schools. So who was on this virtual meeting?
Oh, hundreds of people, Tiziana. You had 170-plus people comment in the public comment section. It was an incredible display. These meetings tend to go long when they're in person. You know, in past years, they've gone until the lights automatically turned off. But this had to be a record breaker. You had people from across the city, passionate testimony. And the meeting ran from 5 to 2 a.m., yeah, so up almost 9 hours. And it was mainly people really invested in discussing this change on both sides.
And now give us a sense of the stakes and the tenor of the meeting where this moment with Locanto happened. You know, as you say, 170 people making public comment here.
Yeah, I think you have to think about the outsized profile, really, of the Boston Latin School, not the exam schools in general so much as that one school. It feels like this brass ring. People really covet a seat in that school. So when you propose a modification, even on a one-year basis, namely dropping the test, people develop strong opinions. So you had a bunch of people saying this would be a blow to the history, still very raw, of structural racism in the district. But then you had parents, largely white and Asian parents, saying the change had been rushed through and would devastate their children or derail their chances at the best possible life coming out of the school. So it was in this really charged context in which the remark was made.
Okay, so and now I think we've got that backdrop. So after some discussion among our team, we decided that we should play the tape from the moment where Locanto appears to mock participants in the meeting. The first voice you're going to hear is Executive Secretary Elizabeth Sullivan calling forth the next participants in the public comment portion of the meeting, which Max referenced. Now, this moment was offensive enough that Locanto apologized and resigned over it today. So listeners should be forewarned. And the tape's going to last about 25 seconds. Here it is.
Ling Shen Dong and Michelle Donovan, if you could please raise your hands virtually. Ms. Who?
That was like Shania, Shania, Shanane, and Boo Boo, and David, right?
Ms. Who?
Okay, so Max, did most people on the Zoom call hear Locanto, and what happened next?
Well, I think we have to understand this remark didn't surface, didn't happen until around 11:30 p.m. So we're 6.5 hours in, and I have to say, I myself, Tiziana, did not catch it live. Bad time to take a break. But then you come back to it and people are calling Locanto out on Twitter, not a huge group, but you know, 4 or 5 people that I saw, and it word kind of spread. And then of course it really gathered steam as people look back at that and saw the transcript this morning. And then shortly thereafter, Locanto informed Mayor Walsh that he would resign.
Okay. And what have the reactions been since the news of his resignation? What are you hearing?
Yeah, I think an incredible dichotomy of the city that we were in, one that ironically Locanto called attention to in his remarks as he announced his yes vote, sealing unanimity to suspend the test. He said, you know, we're a progressive city, we're a liberty, or those are parts of our identity. And at the same time, this divide is very real. He said it simmers just beneath the surface. And gosh, it just feels like such an awkward, uncomfortable case in point of that fact that you can make this change that so many have called for such a long time, and at the same time there appears to be some sort of racial animus or a lack of care and sensitivity, you know, just off screen.
A number of people called for his resignation, Max. Now it's happened. Have you heard comments from public officials or others this afternoon?
Yeah, it seemed like a pretty healthy minority, if not a majority, of school committee members had called for his resignation as of 10 or 11. And I have heard from some of them. I spoke to Councillor Andrea Campbell, who was among those calling for Lucando to resign. And she reflected a little on the pain of that moment last night.
Here we are talking about inequities in our education system, but then to have it turn into a conversation where the leader of that body, a public servant, would be caught saying racist remarks, just, I think, signified to many that there is still incredible work for us to do in this city.
Now, Campbell also said she hopes the next chair of the school committee is a person of color, and they've got a few people of color on the committee from which to choose, as well as possibly making a new appointment. I think we just want to say, you know, Boston School Committee is unique in that it's appointed by the mayor, with the exception of a few regional school districts in the state. Andrea Campbell's running for mayor, and, you know, there have been debates about having an elected school committee again, so this points up those issues as well.
All right, just very briefly, Max, last question for you. Last night's meeting would have made news anyway, because this is a suspension of the exam for the Boston Exam Schools for a year. Just how significant of a development, briefly, is that?
It's huge, and it's sad that it's been overshadowed. Yes, it's a temporary change, but this is something that has stood up as a kind of wall or barrier or fissure in this district for years, and it really is what we should be talking about today.
All right, that's WBUR Edify reporter Max Larkin. Max, get some sleep, and thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tiziana.
Okay, so now we turn to Superintendent of Boston Public Schools, Brenda Caselius, who joins us on the line. Superintendent Caselius, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you. Glad to be on.
So, Superintendent, this has got to be a very busy day for you. Two major policy decisions affecting the Boston Public Schools in the last 24 hours. I want to use your time well and talk about those two things. But first, let's address the story I just discussed with WBUR's Max Larkin, which is the resignation of Boston School Committee Chair Michael Lucando. Was his resignation appropriate under the circumstances?
Well, you know, Max said it right, where, you know, this is unfortunate. It was awkward at the moment. And, you know, none of us want to, you know, hear that. And it was just a very, very challenging time. And it was the right decision for the chairman to step down. I spoke with him earlier today. I know that he is highly regretful and embarrassed by his own statements and has apologized. But again, you know, this is what's really facing us. And it's a true reflection, as Max said, of the conversation that we were having last night about race in the city and within our schools and the true inequities that exist and the challenge for all of us looking at our own biases and how we respond and own those and learn from them and grow from them.
In the context of this heightened time and the tensions in the meeting already last night, I want to ask you, you know, what do you think the impact is on the relationship between the schools, the school committee, and families? And what are the next steps you need to take as the superintendent to address any concerns about what that means for these relationships?
Yeah, you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic, and we have said all along, you know, this is the triple pandemic for so many of our families of, you know, the illness of course, and the virus that we're fighting, the joblessness and now the homelessness with this moratorium being lifted on evictions. And then, of course, the racism within this country. And so it's quite the challenge as a new superintendent coming in to address the significant inequities within our system for so many of our children. 75% of our children are children of needs. 50% are children who speak languages other than English, many new to country. Many of our students, Black and Latinx, so we have an Asian, and we have a big job ahead of us of educating our children. And it is important that we rebuild and establish the trust with the community. So much so, as I went and visited all last fall, this was one of the things that was brought up to me quite frequently, that we actually have it as one of our commitments to the community to establish and cultivate trust within the district. And so there is much trust building to be had here.
We're so remote. We're so distant from each other, Superintendent Caselli. You know, what's a step you can take, like today, tomorrow, on this trust front? Are there specific families you want to reach out to, or meetings that you want to have?
Well, absolutely. Actually, tonight I'll be meeting with Counselor Finn in the Asian community, in his area there in Chinatown. I'm happy that Counselor Flynn has put that together for us to do so, and has invited me and my staff there to discuss this decision and many other things on their mind. And so that's one step. Obviously, we have our equity roundtables that we do frequently have. We started doing those during the pandemic virus closure right away. And so we've been doing those weekly. And now I think through the summer, we were doing them biweekly. Those are very important touch points. So we'll continue to reach out and meet with our community and talk about race. I mean, I always say you have to lean into it, and you have to own your own bias and see it, and then be willing to do something about it.
All right. So ultimately, last night, after 8.5 hours, the school committee voted unanimously to suspend for a year the admissions tests for the Boston Exam schools due to the pandemic. That is a very, very big deal in the city of Boston. How did you come to the decision that this was a necessary step you had to take?
Well, I've never been a fan of standardized tests or entrance criteria and high stakes testing for children. And I've never really kept that secret in my career. But, you know, it wasn't my fight to have here in Boston, really, you know, because there's been this historic tradition for exam schools for many, many years. And it was laid to my doorstep when I first became superintendent back in July by the Lawyers for Civil Rights, who wrote a letter in collaboration with many other civil rights organizations, including the NAACP, to challenge the district around the fairness within their admissions policy. And, you know, the step that I was going to take as one of the first steps that they recommended within that letter was to address the exam itself and to make it fair, to have an untimed test, to be able to align that to the state standards so that our BPS students had a fighting chance at doing well on the test. And then COVID hit. And of course, we know that our students were disproportionately impacted by this pandemic. And so it just became so clear that if we really were going to be an anti-racist organization, and if we were really going to create more equity, that we would have to take this head on. So I spoke to the mayor and the chair and asked for them to create a working group. And we created a working group. I want to thank Mike Contopassis, who is the former superintendent of Boston Public Schools, as well as headmaster. We now call them head of schools over at Boston Latin School. And then Tanisha Sullivan, who is the president of the NAACP, and they co-chaired this working group of parents and school leaders and community members who came forward with some pretty bold recommendations for how we could make it a fairer and better system for our students. And I couldn't be prouder in this moment and very thankful to all of the school committee members, especially the mayor and his leadership as well, who did speak also at the school committee, as well as the, you know, nearly 200 people who spoke last night, either in favor or against the proposal. That's how democracy is won. And that is how great policy is made as well.
So that answer, Superintendent, begs the question. You know, one strategy for making a disruptive change is you do it temporarily and then you never put the old thing back. Does this pause increase the likelihood that Boston Public Schools permanently does away with the exam? And would that, in your mind, be a good outcome?
Well, we do have the opportunity to really examine this now and to look at the achievement of the students and how they persist. We were able to present some data last night on our slide showing that Black students actually persist at a higher rate than other students in Boston Latin School, as well as the other exam schools, if given the opportunity. So I think that, you know, once you open the doors of opportunity, then you have students who believe they can, and then you shift culture and climate at the schools and within our whole entire Boston community, and the expectations for our children who are Black and Brown, because it becomes very clear and very evident that they have just been denied this opportunity, but that they actually can excel and do excel at really high rates when they're given the opportunity.
I think we are all hoping that school will be in person next fall. So take me down the halls of one of Boston's exam schools next fall. We're walking down the hall. What do you hope and expect to see? And what do you hope and expect to feel walking down one of those halls as a result of taking this step?
Well, one thing that I'm hoping to be able to do is to meet with these incoming seventh graders right away and say, you are a special group of kids, and create a sense of community among this group of students, this specific cohort, and give them a lot of special attention and a lot of special love so that they feel the weight of this historic moment and this opportunity to prove to all of us that we are better than what we have been. And I know I'm just so impressed by Boston youth. They're this incredible, quite honestly. And I know that they'll lead us in forward in this decision and lead us forward into showing us a better way. And so I fully expect that teachers and school leaders and all of the staff within the schools will welcome these students. I know that the student body is already planning and preparing. We had the parent alumni group of BLS speak last night in favor of this proposal, which was really heartening. We had several alumnus as well as alumni from all three schools, current students from all three schools speak and send letters. So I think they're ready for these students, and they're welcoming them with open arms.
And just briefly before we move on to our next subject, a lot of parents also last night not in agreement with this step, and they're concerned that their kids have spent a tremendous amount of time studying and preparing for the test. What do you say to them?
I do understand that this is a disappointment for many parents who were expecting their children to have admission into the exam schools, but they have the same fair shot that everybody else has now. And, you know, that is what happens when you equal the playing field. Some who have privilege will have a little less privilege in that. And, you know, that's the only way that you really get at equity. And so, you know, hopefully we'll have greater geographic diversity, and students are still marked on their and ranked on their merit because this is a ranking. So this has been something that's gone out in the myth that this is a lottery. This is not a lottery. This is still a ranking by GPA. However, there's more geographical representation all throughout the city, which is a much fairer way to ensure that everybody has a chance at one of these three schools.
All right. And
however,
time,
let me just say this. I think that we shouldn't just have three. We should have we do have many other high schools that are really great choices for students. And so it's really looking at our overall high school redesign and making sure that we have great options for all of our students, where they have arts and academics and rigor and athletics opportunities for all of our students. And that's really the goal, is that, you know, it's not just three schools, but it is schools in every single neighborhood where parents feel confident they can send their kids to and they'll have a great success.
Okay, so all Boston Public School students are home today after announcement yesterday that the system is going fully remote. When I heard the announcement, I thought, I wonder, was this a decision, or was there a number trigger? And we reached a point where the numbers obviated the decision. You sort of had to do this. Which was it?
Well, it is, it's about the numbers, really. It's about the positivity rate that we have in the city of Boston. And I can't thank Chief Martinez for his leadership on this and this pandemic crisis, as well as the mayors. We know they have just been great partners in helping us understand the community spread and whether it is or is not safe to open up our schools. And so, you know, we had been watching this for the past really 4 weeks as the state turned Boston into red, as we started to see the numbers tick up and move over 4.1. And as you know, we had the injunction with the BTU about going to 4.1. And we still
positivity rate in BTU being Boston Teachers Union. Sorry to interrupt.
That's correct. Yeah, sorry. And so, you know, it was important for us to really be clear with parents because they want certainty about, you know, what's going to be happening for their students. And we really wanted to continue to serve our high need students. So we continued to serve them. But now we've determined that, you know, with 5.7, that was just such a huge jump that, we didn't want to risk that, and we felt like we needed to start to be more conservative with the our schools being open. And so what we're going to do now is anything under five, we will have school for our high need students, and anything at or under four for 2 weeks in a row, we will have our students, all other students return. So we
so
want
I'm
to
just
see
thinking
a two-week trend.
I'm just thinking about being a parent. And yesterday I thought my child was going to be in school today, my high needs child. And
yes.
All of a sudden they're not. And now I have no idea when they are going back. I mean, talk about the hardship on families of
yeah.
these last minute decisions and the unknown of when it's going to be reversed.
Oh, let me tell you, it is heart-wrenching. It is heart-wrenching. And it is so challenging and difficult for all of us. And, you know, we just want our kids back in school. We know they need to be back with their teachers who love them. The teachers want them back in school. So I have been at every opportunity I have asking the public to please comply with the health guidance. It is absolutely the only way our children are going to be able to come back to school. I say often, you know, it's the adults who create the conditions in which children can succeed. And right now we are not doing that as adults in the community. And we have got to step up and do our job and wear our mask and not go out if we're sick and wash our hands and ensure that we're not gathering in large social gatherings. Otherwise, this virus, it will spread and it will continue to spread. And we will unfortunately lose lives. And this is very serious. And we have to, not only for our children, but for our children, for our grandparents and for those who have underlying conditions, we all need to do the right thing for our neighbor.
I know this is a tough question, but I think everyone is being realistic about the fact that there's going to be some learning loss this year, especially if we wind up being fully remote for any extended period of time. Do you have an estimate for how much learning loss you think Boston Public School students might be facing as a result of this pandemic this year?
I just don't yet. You know, we've done some assessments and we don't have the data in from that. I mean, we do anticipate that there's going to be learning loss. You just can't help it, you know, and it is just honestly driving me crazy, really, quite honestly, because I want to do so much more than what we're able to do. And it's just it's the hardest moment I've ever had in my 33-year career this year, because of the uncertainty, because of the unpredictable nature of this virus. You know, you just are lurching from one point to another point, quite honestly, to try to figure it out. And adjust. And now we're trying to figure out how do we provide services still to our high need families. I mean, talking to them yesterday was just so challenging and difficult. One parent sobbing in the phone because she's just so worried about her child and needs the support. It was really, really hard. And so we have to find a way to serve our children with the highest needs. And I'm committed to doing that.
That is Boston Public Schools Superintendent Brenda Caselius. Again, I know what kind of a day this must have been for you, and I appreciate you taking the time to speak with us. I hope you will come back and talk with us some more soon as we continue to watch these issues.
I will definitely.
Thank you.